Welcome to an all new episode of the Lisa Ann Experience. I am your host, Lisa Ann, and I want to extend my gratitude to you for joining me, making me part of your listening experience. I appreciate all of you. If you're a new listener, subscribe, rate, and review. Make sure you go back and listen to some of the episodes from earlier this year. Had some really powerful and moving guests on, just like I'm going to today. Before I get to that reminder, Fit Soda right here. This is the healthy alternative to feeling like you have a sweet tooth, that you get that little craving, but no calories, all goodness. Benefits with bubbles is the slogan, and that's really what it is. I'm stuck on stupid with this black cherry. I love this flavor so much, but check out at Fit Sodas on Instagram, Fit Soda on Twitter, and find it at a local store near you. I've just got back from another adventure after the birthday. You know, there was just this so much traveling and so much fun being had for the month of my birthday. Actually, having that much fun for a month was crazy. And then a couple of days later, I was off to St. Louis for the morning after show in St. Louis that I do every Friday morning during fantasy football season. The show is at TMASTL on YouTube. You can go back and watch our live event from Wednesday night at Maggie O'Brien's in St. Louis. You can go back and watch our live remotes from Normandy Golf Course, where we were spending 2 days for a charity golf event. The charity was Birdies for Bipolar. You can check that out at birdies4bipolar.org. A great charity. Glad to be a part of this event. This is going on my fifth year. Even erasing the years we didn't travel at all, but before that it was four. And I love being a part of these charity events. I have another one coming up around the corner. When I planned this for June 4th, after hearing the very first commercial advertising this on SiriusXM, I was like, I've got to sign up right away. It seemed like forever ago. It is now next week. It is the overnight walk for suicide prevention. If you go to my timelines at The Real Lisa Ann, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, you're going to see my link. You can also go to theovernight.org. So it's a dusk till dawn walk, raising money for suicide prevention. I've already brought in $3,200. I'm so excited about that. I'm so thankful for my followers. Everybody chips in and it really does add up. So being a part of these charity events is just something that is so fulfilling. I'm starting to get responses from listeners that have now signed up for their first charity events. My friend Jeff, who is walking for Alzheimer's just like I do every single year, having everybody jump on this bandwagon with me. There could be no better impact I could be having, because, you know, it is the great, equalizer. When you show up at a charity event, you meet other like-minded people who want to do good, who want to spend time doing something for a positive outcome. And it is just the greatest vibe ever. So if you haven't done one, find something that's important to you, sign up for it, whether it's a walk, whether it's just raising money through friends on social media. Instagram's made it incredibly easy. I can go and just set up something and everything goes directly to these organizations. So it's so easy. And it's something that, you know, it's been in my life. When I was a kid, my dad used to raise money for breast cancer. And back then, raising money meant going door to door. Remember, this is pre-internet. And he would have this coffee can and he would take it door to door for donations. And it was his responsibility to put the money in the bank and then send the check. And, you know, the honor system was very different that back then. People actually could trust that people would do this, but he did this every year. And it's something that has been in my life. And it's a great reminder to bring the positive things from relationships that may not have ended up positive. I don't have a connection with my family, but at the same time, I can bring the positive things that I've learned from them into my life so that they're still part of my being, right? So charity events, a big part of it. St. Louis was a blast. I will say though, for those of you listeners in St. Louis, I know I have a Jeff in St. Louis who I got to see at the live remote. You all have some wild weather. I mean, the tornado warning, they call into your room at the hotel. They want you to seek shelter in the basement. And this is normal. Leaving for the airport, that's just downpouring and everybody's just driving like it's normal. I give you all a lot of credit for the gumption that you have to not just freak out over it. Can be nice, and then 4 hours later, there's a tornado coming through. Like, what is this all about? It was crazy to me to have that bird's eye view and witness it firsthand, but I got there on Wednesday. I went to the live remote. We did it at Maggie O'Brien's Great Sports Bar. It was packed. It was so crowded that they had people waiting outside to get in once people left, which was exciting. And I get to see Doug Vaughn, one of the hosts on the Morning After Show. And I have never realized before that we share the same birthday. And Doug is not only one of my favorite people. When you walk a golf course with Doug, you know, we're cruising around the cart, we're walking over and talking to people who are playing, you realize how that city loves him. And to think that I share a birthday, he's got a great sense of humor. I love Doug so much. So I find out we share a birthday. So there's that. Then you got Plowboy, you got Iggy. Jay wasn't able to be there, but the new guy, Jackson, new guy on the street with the Morning After Show, I got to finally meet Jackson. So last year, you know, because we didn't do the event, I did my Friday spots and I start my Fantasy Football Fridays, which is a day that I do for the entire fantasy football season. So it's about 20 weeks because I start early prepping everybody for their drafts. It ends right around Christmas, which is perfect because then I can really just enjoy the playoffs. I start my day of doing anywhere from it to every year. It's a little bit different. Some years I've done 5 shows a day. Some years I do 10 shows a day. But that entire day is just be focused in my office here, connected on a device. It's a Comrex device. Now, it might be different this year because with the Morning After Show now being on YouTube, maybe I'll be on screen with them, which would be awesome as well. But I sit there with this radio device and I study each different market that I'm going on air. And I like to call in early. I like to patch in early. And the producers always feel bad. They're like, oh, we're running a couple behind, or, oh, we won't take you for 4 or 5 minutes. But as a radio host, I know how stressful it is when you are waiting for your guest and you know they're not on the line yet and you're coming back from your break and you're not sure if you should introduce them or not, if they're going to make it. Like, there's all these thoughts. I don't want anybody to have those thoughts. So I become close with the producer. And the new producer for the Morning After Show, Jackson, who I hadn't met yet till this past week in St. Louis. I get to meet his parents as well. I love them so much. Shout out to Jackson's mom who ran up to me in the sports bar to tell me how much she loves listening to me on Fridays. Shout out to Jackson's family for loving him so much. But I got to meet Jackson and I get close to the producer because sometimes we'll just sit on the phone and, you know, chop it up for 3 or 4 minutes. And they get to know me a little bit. We touch base. Sometimes they'll ask me their own personal fantasy football lineup questions, which I love. I love when the producer is like, hey, let me get my question in real quick. I got this lineup decision. So Jackson and I became very close. And by the end of the trip, I realized something. Jackson has Joe Burrow swag. There is no doubt about it. He's got Joe Burrow swag. He's got a great attitude. He's incredibly good at what he does. He's really upped the game for the Morning After Show's Instagram and social media. Like, he is their little Swiss Army knife, just like Kay is my Swiss Army knife, who edits all my podcasts and great traveling companion and adventure seeker and all of that. That's Jackson for the Morning After Show. So I got to meet him in person, which it makes these shows better for me when I get to meet people in person. A lot of times I do radio spots with people I've never met, and that's normal, right? You're just calling in, you know, you get to know them from listening. I always listen to their shows, then I get to know, you know, their personalities, their quirks, any inside jokes that I need to know. I want to feel included, right? So I do my homework. But when I get to meet people, it really connects it. It makes the season so much more fun. It gives us a better base of just our relationship, meeting Jackson's parents. Like, now I have this whole newfound love, but just getting there and seeing everybody again, seeing everybody on the green, seeing everybody at the live event, seeing everybody from the radio station, Tim McKernan, who has just got the greatest radio voice. You can hear him talking across the golf course because he's got that beautifully smooth radio voice that carries and narrates, and he's a great storyteller. He's amazing. So seeing all of them in person, after not being there since 2019, was truly a gift. All of this gratitude I'm feeling for just being able to go to the airport and see my people and do things and get out. It's just awesome. It feels like life is moving again. It's moving at a beautiful pace. I'm really excited about that. Friendships just blossoming and getting stronger because, again, we're all getting out and we're seeing each other more often. Last night, I cooked dinner for my friend Haley, who you may or may not have seen in some of my birthday photos. Haley is a singer, a pop artist, a sweetheart. She was also a guest here on the Lisa Ann Experience. You can look up that episode, Haley Gold. Haley's getting ready to leave for Germany on Thursday and knew that she wasn't going to see me for a couple of weeks. So she's like, let's get together. And I said, how about this? When you're done with work, You come over to my place. I'll have dinner ready. Something simple. I made fresh split pea soup and a salad. I did ask what type of soup she wanted because I had planned on making us a big salad and soup. We sat and we talked. I gave her some skincare tips. I gave her a little alarm. I travel with these doorstop alarms when I'm on the road. It's battery operated. Slide it under your door and you turn it on. And if anybody wiggles your door, the alarm is piercing. And I wanted to give that to her going to Germany, being on her own for this trip with work. And so we just had a great time. Just connecting on this intimate level is so special. I love having people over for dinner because I feel like we can talk for hours and we're not holding up a waitress's table. I feel like nobody's listening to our conversation if it gets kind of personal. I just feel like it's awesome. And I'm thrilled to be doing it. So a beautiful dinner last night with Haley, right here with you and one of the friends that Haley knows, part of the girl gang in New York City that I've so successfully brought together. Today's guest, you can follow all things on Barstool Sports. Casey Smith is also the host with Brandon on Necessary Roughness at Barstool Sports. You can follow her on IG at Casey_Smith, and that is K-A-Y. CE_Smith, and on Twitter at Casey Smith. This is going to be a great conversation, getting you football fans hyped for the season and the rest of you a little bit closer to our girl gang. And here we are today, joined by one of the members of my New York City girl gang, a nonviolent, very fun, super awesome gang, also a sports voice that you're going to get to learn a lot more about. Follow all things at Casey Smith on IG with the underscore and on Twitter with Al. Everything will be here for you when you watch this video on YouTube. Casey Smith, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. I'm so happy to be here. I know we talk a lot about the girl gang and it not being violent, but I know you won't let anybody mess with any of us and vice versa. Like we're very kind until we don't need to be anymore.
Most definitely. That's why I wanted the private room at Say Less, because I was like, look, we just don't, this many women, the amount of guys that would probably take a chance, want to shoot their shot and decide I'm walking up that table. Mind you, the looks we would have all given them. Okay. The looks we would have all given them. But I just knew us having that beautiful private room, we'd really be able to relax, which we did. But if it needed to be violent, it could be.
Absolutely. Well, and you deserved it. It was your birthday. You deserved all the peace and quiet and not all the guys coming up and asking pictures. I tell people this all the time. When we all go out, it's so funny to watch how people react to our girl gang, because obviously it's, you know, the beautiful women and people of all different kinds of professions. And then you're always usually in the back because you're like, you know, you're making sure we're all okay. And to me, it feels like a scene in Entourage, right? Where it's like they're seeing everybody walk by and then all of a sudden Vincent Chase pops in. They're like, wait a minute. Like, that's what I feel like with you. It's like, they're like, oh, this is a nice group of girls. Like, this is cool. And then all of a sudden it's Lisa Ann. It's like, yeah, she's the queen bee. Okay. But that's the way it feels when we go out.
Hey, this queen bee made our little friend Haley dinner last night because she's leaving for Germany for a week and she wanted to go over some road stuff and I wanted to give her a lock. So I use this, it looks like a door stopper. It's got a 9-volt battery in it. You turn it on, you put it under your door in your hotel room. And if anybody even wiggles your door, the noise this thing makes would make people think there was a fire and they'd run out of the room. So I've recently bought them for all of us and I'm giving them to you guys. Like each time I see you, the next time I see you, you get yours. I bought the 9-volt batteries and put them in as well, so it doesn't sit in a box without a battery. So I gave Haley hers last night and she was like, my mom is going to love you so much for this. My mom is so worried about me traveling. My mom is going to love this. I'm like, I can't sleep in a hotel without it. So you'll love it.
It's amazing. Thank you. I've never even heard of that. I've stayed in, you know, thousands of hotel rooms in my career, never even heard of that. So yes, my parents will also be very, very happy. So it doesn't surprise me you're taking care of us even when we don't know it, but I'm thankful for the Girl Squad because it really has been like a life-changing thing and obviously getting to know you, but I know you'll take care of us no matter what.
I will. And it's so important, you know, it's so important for us all to be like more thankful than ever to be able to go out and connect with people in person, but also to like make that effort. I think we can all get so wrapped up in work and life and plans. You've got a wedding here, you've got this year here, and you're like, okay, but if you don't plan it, you won't do it. And I'm just seeing this build with us and I'm seeing it be more contagious with my other friends in other parts of the US that are like, hey, I got this big group. I'm like, yes, get groups together, bring it. Yes. 'Cause then we can all kind of branch off on our own and do our own. It's just about having more friends, more like-minded people in our lives to soothe our soul, to feed and nourish us with love. And it's just, it's been life-changing for me.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And I tell you this all the time, but it truly is cool to see, you know, the different ages and the different professions. And just like you mentioned, when we had your birthday party, just looking around that room and seeing, you know, 25 women of all different backgrounds coming together and all sharing a drink. And it was like, wow, this is what New York is about. This is what, you know, LA is the same way, but this is what these places are about. It's a melting pot. And so, as always, and I don't just say this because we're on YouTube and I'm trying to be nice, like, thank you for doing that, because it really has been a cool thing to do, because I work with all dudes. I mean, you know how this goes. When you work in a male dominated industry, it's like, wow, I can sit down and have a glass of wine with some girls for once. Thank God.
You work with all dudes. And before we even get into your beautifully developed work story, let's talk about the fact that you tweeted the other day that you had a wrap in the refrigerator at Barstool and somebody ate your wrap but left the shreds of salad behind. Did you find said culprit? I'm sure you can all still find it at Twitter at KC Smith with a Y. Okay. Don't forget the Y, K-A-Y-C. But did you ever figure out who ate your wrap? Because it's been bothering me.
No, of course I didn't. We work with heathens. Like, you've been in this office. Like, and it's so funny when people come in this office and see the way that just the content side, because obviously, you know, our business floor, very clean, our production side, content not. It's an animal house. It truly is a fraternity house. And so when people come in, they're like, how do you live this way? I'm like, if you come to my apartment, it is pristine, because I can't do it. But it's like these guys, you know, that, you know, we're here at all hours of night, obviously with sports on super late. You know, there are a lot of people that I'm sure, you know, the younger interns that are like, hey, I don't want to pay for cable at home. I'm going to watch it. And just every once in a while, a lunch will go missing. And I assume that most people don't make a big deal about it. Every once in a while they do. I wanted that wrap so badly. And I had gotten it in the morning and I was like, all right, it'll be here. And it just wasn't. The problem is even in a place where there's cameras quite literally everywhere but the bathrooms, the one blind spot is our fridge. I don't think that's on accident. I don't think that's by accident. I think it's on purpose. People don't want to know who's stealing shit out of the fridge. But I'm telling you, if it happens again, I'll be making a scene.
I think what you need to do moving forward is put an air tag in your lunch. You know those little air tags?
Yes.
Okay, you need to put the air tag in the thing, have it alert your phone if it moves, because you can set a setting on it. And I would love for you to just go out there on like an IG live and catch whoever this is. Okay, the shame they would feel over stealing a wrap.
This is not the first time this has happened to me, but what's, again, because of where I work and who I work with, I try to eat pretty healthy for lunch, because I know that, you know, I'm going to be going out and having some drinks or whatever. So I try to. So most of the time they don't even touch my stuff, because how dare they eat healthy? It's like my green juices, they go completely untouched. My kombucha is completely untouched. I guess this wrap had good enough cream cheese on it. I'm not sure, but it was gone. And the salad was not, like, the salad wasn't even a good salad. It was just the fact that they left just the little shreds of salad and put it back in the fridge. I was like, where am I right now? I'm in my 30s. This is not the way I'm supposed to live. But at the end of the day, I love it. I mean, you've been here a million times. You know how it is. It's the Wild West.
The energy at Barstool is unmatchable. Of any studio I've ever visited around the world, unmatchable. Let's flash forward. Let's go back in time and talk about your introduction to sports, because you are a deep-rooted Aggie. I need to know where this came from and how this came a part of your life. Something everybody always asks me, how'd you become such a sports girl? I think your story is going to sound a little bit similar. It's how we were raised, but tell me how this started for you.
100%, it's my dad. And he, you know, he likes me to say it because he likes the clout of it, but it really is true as well. It's just myself and my younger sister. So he didn't have any boys. So I think he was just hoping and praying that one of us would be interested in sports. My sister could care less. Like, she honestly, not even joking, we went to games. We had A&M season tickets for football games our entire life. In high school, she asked what a first down was. And my dad was just like, oh God, like, at least Casey likes it. Like, she had no interest. She wanted to go to, like, you know, get her face painted. You know, that was her thing. But from a very, very young age, like, he really introduced me to not just football, but A&M football. So, you know, that became, you know, I always joke around and say I was going to games in the womb. Like, my mom and my dad would take me, you know, for my entire life. And I just loved it. I loved everything A&M. I wore all maroon all the time. But what it did was really open up my interest in football as a whole. And then I played basketball in high school, ran track. You know, it was kind of like football was the catalyst. But what I learned was that I loved football so much that I was like, well, if I don't get paid to do this in the future, then I'm really putting a hobby to waste. And so my whole life, I just wanted to work in football.
And it's so different. You know, college sports is how I was introduced to sports. So I was going to Lafayette College basketball games in Easton, Pennsylvania, my whole childhood. And when I went to my first professional game, it was 1983, 76ers. I just remember thinking, this is so different. Like, people aren't talking to each other. At a college event, everybody is turned around because everybody's on the same page. We're your Aggies. You know, we're there for Lafayette College. It's such a community, and it's such an event every single game.
Yeah, if you've never been to a big-time college game or college atmosphere, it's hard to explain. I mean, you can't – it's really hard to tell people in New York City, like, who are Giants fans or Jets fans or Knicks, you know, whoever it may be, to be like, you don't get how crazy these things can be until they actually go. And they're like, oh, wow, like, this is a completely different vibe. But you're right. It's like everyone's there for the same reason. You're not rooting, you know, for – like, and granted, if you grew up in New York and you're a New York fan, that makes sense. I think with colleges, you have to choose that. Like, that's where you want to go, or that's where you want to graduate from. The passion is unmatched. And, you know, like I said, it was like I wasn't going to go to college if I couldn't get an A&M. I had no option in my brain.
Really?
Like, only – oh, yeah. I was – granted, I would have gone. Like, my parents would have made me. But in my head, it was like A&M or bust. But I, you know, I bring friends from the East Coast because I love living on the East Coast. I wish I was, you know, sometimes I say I wish I was born on the East Coast. I think I fit much better up here. But I'll bring friends to A&M games, not as much anymore because we're always on the road. But they're like, there's 110,000 crazy people here screaming at a football game. I'm like, yeah, that's what the South is like. That's what a lot of places in the country are like. It's just not the East Coast, which is a sad thing because I think they should get in the mix.
It is something we miss out on. You've got the people, you've got the band, you've got the pep rally. Like, the level of fandom just rooting for this team is next level. It's just amazing. So you did get to go to Texas A&M. And during that time, what did you go to school for?
I went for communication. They did not have – so A&M is a gigantic school. When I was there, I think it was 55,000 undergrad. Now I believe it's up to 70.
Wow.
They didn't have a broadcasting major. That's never made sense to me. It's like you have literally 55,000 undergrads but no broadcasting. So I was like, huh, I wonder how I can finagle that. So I did major in communication, minor in journalism. But what I was really there for was working for the athletic department. So my freshman year, I was like, how can I get my foot in the door? And I had friends who were equipment managers for the football team that were older than me that I had gone to high school with. And that summer between high school and freshman year, they introduced me to the athletic director. And all of a sudden, I was slinging Gatorade on the sidelines for the football team my freshman year. Like, I remember, like, you know, having the, you know, the green water bottles, but I would have one that had specific flavorings for, like, the guys that, like, were the nicest to me that I could hand off during games and practice. But that was my foot in the door. That was the way to get there. And I did that for a year. And then ended up at the production side of things for game, doing the Jumbotrons, you know, and I got to broadcast from tailgates, which was like the coolest thing ever.
So cool.
Yeah, it was just such a roundabout thing. And now when I look back at it, like, I don't even think I realized how, like, just random everything came together, but how important the timing was. Because by my senior year, Johnny Manziel was there. And so Johnny Manziel winning the Heisman in 2012, I graduated in May of 2012. It was just kind of being there at the right time. But also, like, had I not decided I was okay pouring Gatorade into bottles at, you know, 6 a.m. for 2-a-days, I might not have been where I am now because I just was able to find a way in the door.
Yeah, you found your way in the door and you knew networking was going to get you the next step. And what else were you going to do? This also brought you closer to the team. It got you more invested. You were already invested. I love that you said quite a few of your friends that were older than you went to high school with, because that's how many Aggies are born and raised to be Aggies. So I'm sure there was a comfort of going away to college and knowing people there because you had some contacts.
Yeah, I mean, my best friend, her, who's also named Casey, she got married pretty recently. We met between high school and college because I was living with some of those guys that I'd gone to high school with, who I was close with. She was mutual friends. And so we met, you know, when we were barely 18 years old, and we met, you know, we all lived together for 2-a-days because it was miserable. And it was like, but at least we'll do this together. And, you know, of course, the college atmosphere as it is. But, you know, now all these years later, we've stayed so close. And I was the maid of honor in her wedding because it was like that time period of our life was so important. But Aggies are so crazy about each other. It's like, well, if you're an Aggie and I'm an Aggie, we've got to get along.
We've got to get along. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got to get along. And even if we don't, we're not going to say it out loud. We might have internal issues, but we're not going to say it out loud. But A&M truly is, it's crazy to see the connection. But when I moved to the East Coast and moved to Boston and then eventually now in New York, it's like, I realized college football fans are college fans in general, we're kind of weird. Like, and I'm okay with it. Like, I love it, but like, we're a weird group of people. It is in the most positive way, we're in a cult. Like, that's absolutely what it is. And I have no problem admitting that.
No, it's true, because during the season, you'll drive around in an area like where you live, and you'll see mailboxes, door coverings, decorations. Like, every day looks like a parade's going to happen. It's just football season. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, our son plays and all the neighbors decorate for him. Like, things like that, that are like normal growing up. But there aren't, other than the South, there aren't a lot of like big alliances like that, right? You're right. We're lacking that in the Northeast. We really are. Big schools. I mean, Penn State was a big one. There was a lot of energy there. I went to a lot of those games when I was younger. But still, nothing compared to that Texas A&M vibe, that you being Aggie. So from Texas A&M, going to school, water girl, getting a little bit of time on camera, working the Jumbotron, where was the next step?
So I tell Johnny this all the time, because it's just such a small world. And like, Lisa, you know, it's like people always come back around and you're like, hey, remember that one time? Like, I was friends with Johnny at A&M, and you know, I was older and I was working at a place called Texags at the time, the year he won. But what was really the Heisman, but what was really cool was like everybody's attention was on tiny little College Station, Texas. Everybody wanted a piece of people who knew Johnny or were around Johnny. And I just happened to be that person, because I was working in local sports radio. And I went to SEC Media Days, which is an insane place as it is. Like, you talk about, like, and you know, the Big Ten is crazy too. So I won't, you know, I absolutely give them credit. But the people who worship Nick Saban are, I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Like, they just want to be there to breathe his air. It's crazy. I'm like, these people are driving, like, do they even know where Tuscaloosa is? No, but they know Nick Saban's going to be there. And so when I went that one year, I had only done a few games on TV at that point. I had done a short stint with Fox Sports Southwest covering the Atlanta Hawks, which now I look back, I'm like, I was there for like a month and a half working with Dominique Wilkins and like just didn't even think anything of it. But that was like my only, the pictures I have with Dominique, I'm like, what? Like, I traveled around with the Hawks for a month and a half. I was like, but that was my only TV experience. And so when I was at SEC Media Days, they're like, hey, this girl, you know, she wants to be a sideline reporter. She's always wanted to work for ESPN. She knows Johnny and has covered the team. Let's throw her on. So my audition was live on TV, talking about Johnny, talking about A&M football. And from that, I got a national sideline gig doing college football, doing college basketball, and then got to do a sports center circuit as well. So I was with ESPN for about 2.5 years. And that was my dream growing up. Erin Andrews was who I wanted to be. That's what I thought the end all be all was. And she's so successful at everything she does.
Yes.
And she's incredible.
Yes.
But what I learned is that's like that little, you know, the little niche box that they wanted to put me in. I didn't necessarily fit in it. It's ESPN. It's the end all be all. But they were trying to put me into a certain box that I didn't necessarily think I was the best suited for.
I love that you knew yourself. You wanted to be your authentic self in this situation. It is much harder being in a scripted and timed situation of the capsule of ESPN, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's no going off script. There's no carrying on a conversation a little bit longer. Everything is so formatted. And I get it. It works for them. But if you have somebody that has more to offer, you must have at times felt like that car that wants to take off at the red light, you know, waiting for the light to turn green. You want to peel out, but there's no peeling out there because it is that formatted.
Oh, and I love to talk. You know this. I mean, we'll sit at breakfast and I feel like I talk, you know, 75% of the time. I love it. But also, you know, and the thing with sideline reporters, who I think the ones that are really good do a phenomenal job, because I don't think people really understand what they're supposed to be doing and what, like, they're so accountable for that 30 seconds they get to talk.
Yeah.
And what I really hated was, you know, I would do a 30-second, 45-second clip from the sidelines, you know, with all this, you know, crazy shit happening around me.
Yeah.
And if I said one word wrong, you know, I'm getting murdered for it, right? Because I only have that short period of time, where you've got these people in the booth who have hours and hours and hours to talk. You're not going to remember that. So not only did I realize, like, I have way too much to say, I was hard on myself. I was so hard on myself. If I said a word wrong, if there was a pause that I didn't like, so it became that it wasn't my dream anymore. It became like, it was almost this like way to make me feel bad about myself, even though I knew it was, I mean, you're on the sidelines for ESPN. I'm traveling all over the country. Yeah. So, but it really gave me this kind of introspective thought of, you really loved sports talk radio, so why not do more? And I will never speak ill of my colleagues at ESPN. One of my best friends is still at ESPN, Laura Rutledge. She's, I mean, climbing up the ladder like crazy. But I ran into a lot of complications with the way some of the higher ups saw me. I got told I wasn't smart enough to do anything else, you know, asking me things like, do you think you're as good as this girl? And it was always just a comparison of, you know, the young to mid 20s comparison of what we looked like, what we dressed like. And it was just like, this just isn't me. And
that's a lot of pressure.
Tons of
pressure. It's a lot of pressure.
And I'm getting this, you know, this man telling me like, well, I heard you had to use a teleprompter. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, who cares? Like teleprompters. And I never did use teleprompters, just little things in the industry that people don't realize how much pressure is put on you. And then on top of that, having to prove that you actually do know what you're talking about as a woman. And I love being a woman in sports. I absolutely adore it. I'll never complain about it. But when you're young like that, you do have to prove you know what you're talking about. And I never got that opportunity at ESPN. So I took the risk and they said, hey, we're not going to renew your contract. And I said, all right, I'm going to go back into sports talk radio then. And within 6 months, I'm covering the Patriots, the Celtics, and the Red Sox. You know, so it's like taking another chance on myself is really what got me there. But I needed somebody at ESPN to kind of kick me in the ass and say, well, be better then. And that's what happened.
Yeah. And you feel more comfortable in your own skin because you're not being judged from every single angle.
Right.
I have so much empathy for that because I understand it's everything from what your hair looks like today, how your makeup is, your wardrobe. If you're not feeling well, there's days you travel a lot and you just feel kind of puffy and bloated and you know, your inflammation is up. You have a cold. Like there's no, it's just nice to be in a more casual setting where you can be yourself. Right. And it works for some people. It works so well.
Mm-hmm.
And you also were a little bit before we became a little bit more open-minded. You were actually in the door there before this turning point came where people realized you really shouldn't say that to a woman. You really shouldn't, you know, you really shouldn't address that. You really shouldn't address how she looks. Like this shouldn't be the number one most important thing. But you were right on the cusp of before we started to be a little more, how could I word it? Like just more realistic. We're looking at somebody that does a great job and you know, the looks thing, the aesthetics should be such a minimal part of that great job. Great broadcasters that you never knew what they looked like on the radio and you didn't care.
You didn't care. That's my favorite part about radio. And I know you do it too. And obviously like everyone knows Lisa Ann. So you are, you know, you have that people know it's like, oh, well she knows what she's talking about and she's gorgeous. But one of my favorite things about when I first started working in radio is unless, and I had, you know, such a small following on social media, nobody knew who I was. People would like me because of what I would say on the radio or dislike me. And I'm totally okay with hate listen. If you want to hate click, if you want to, you know, pay attention and throw a bunch of shade at me, that's fine. As long as you're listening, I don't care. It's taken me a long time to get that way. But apathy is the worst thing in the world in this industry. If people don't care about you, you're not doing something. But I loved that radio thing was like, you're just listening to my voice. And I'll never forget one of my guy friends was like, talking to somebody, you know, out in the world. And he was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm friends with Casey Smith. And he was like, oh, that girl that's on College Station Radio, what does she look like? And my friend Drew pulled out a picture of me. And the guy was like, no, like, she doesn't sound like she's blonde hair, blue eyed and tall and skinny. And I was like, what is that supposed to fucking mean? You know, like, what? But I loved that aspect of it. And, you know, and now I say this all the time, like, of course, you know, of course it's nice and it's important for somebody to find you attractive. Like that is, of course, something that we all have in the back of our head. That doesn't get you jobs in the long run. It might get you some jobs, but if you want to thrive in this industry, you have to actually know what you're talking about. Sports Talk Radio helped me get there.
And it's almost better that they don't see you first because there's a judgment placed on a pretty girl in sports. It's the strangest thing, but if you're too good looking, then you have to be an idiot. So there's that. And when you're on the radio and somebody doesn't know what you look like, I feel that the average person is more receptive to the information that they're receiving because they have no preconceived notion. It's almost distracting. It's almost as you, if you chose to watch a show versus listen and you never knew what those people look like, what you would visualize, where you would be, you would just be on their voice. You wouldn't get lost in anything else. So you go back into sports radio in Boston. Now, let me ask you this. When you were working for ESPN, did you live in Bristol?
No, I got to live in College Station actually. So, you know, and I did the weird thing that people don't do anymore, which was buy a house because I was living in College Station, Texas. And I tell this story all the time when people are like, tell me like what the difference in prices are. my mortgage is literally a fifth of what I pay in rent in New York City. And I have a pool and a hot tub and a 3-bedroom home in College Station. You know, it's crazy. But because I was working for ESPN and able to live in, and I had a boyfriend there at the time, and I was like, oh, you know, this is great. I was able to save a lot of money in order to do that. So I was traveling all the time. I was never there. But I eventually hit this point, and I can vividly remember it, Lisa, and I think I've told you this before, but I vividly remember it was like the off season. I think it was in the summer. I almost had like a teacher schedule, like June and July, I wasn't doing anything. And I was in a robe in the morning, wheeling down my driveway, like one of those green trash can things. And I'm like, I'm 26 years old and I'm living this suburb life. Like I'm on Desperate Housewives. Like, this is not me. Like, this is not me at all. And I was like, yeah, I know I travel all the time, but like, what am I doing calling people to fix my garbage disposal? Like, this is not what I want to do. And I had an agent at the time who was very open to exploring other things. And that's how I ended up going to Boston. And I had never been to Boston before. I loved Tom Brady growing up. I mean, who doesn't love Tom Brady? But I went for like an interview for lunch, literally flew 4 hours, had lunch with the head of the TV network at the time, flew back home. And within a few weeks, I had moved to Boston. So I went from, you know, I grew up in Dallas, the Arlington area. My dad always gets mad. I grew up in Arlington, Texas, Dad. You heard me. Dallas-Fort Worth area. But then all of a sudden I was living in Boston and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with everything Boston. Like you mentioned, pro sports are so different than college, but I do feel like Boston is the closest
to the
sports passion
city.
that college
sports have. Oh, it's a great sports city. Everybody rallies. Oh. Everybody rallies for every sport. I mean, it is all the sports bars down by the baseball. Oh my gosh, it's so
gorgeous.
Amazing.
Yes.
What you did is something we've all done. And first of all, your ability to pivot is off the charts. That's why you're so successful, is because you are able to say, okay, that was great then. This doesn't suit me moving forward. Let me readjust. Where I think some people tend to get stuck. It's like, well, I have this house now. I need to work here because this is where I live. Actually, you can live anywhere, everybody. You can live anywhere.
Anywhere you want.
And moving opens you up to meeting new friends, having new experiences. You're kind of pushed out of your comfort zone, which is always a great thing. I think we grow the most when we're completely pushed out of our comfort zone and we get into that unknown space. But I think it's funny because I could picture you. I think it's funny that you have that visual of dragging the trash out because you're just like, I'm too young for this, is what you were actually saying. Like, I'm too young and I have too much life. And it's not that you were planning on having children that minute, but you got the job at ESPN. It just seems like college, the job, and the next step was. And you can't, we do this in life. We take the next step. Do we actually evaluate if this is the right next step, or is it what everybody else we knew has done and the pattern that we even watch in movies or on television shows? Like, this is what we are conditioned to believe are the steps we take in the bold. That's us, our whole girl gang, bold women. Mm-hmm. The bold say, that may have been me yesterday, but that is not going to be me tomorrow.
Right. It's so true. And it's like, you know, there are tons of people and I have tons of friends who, you know, that was the life they wanted to live. They wanted the white picket fence and to be a young mom and to get married right out of school and like more power to them. That sure as hell was not me. And, you know, that's why when I love living on the East Coast now, because there is so much more of people are like, hey, you know what? Marriage isn't for me. Kids aren't for me. I grew up in a household, my parents didn't get married till they were in their 30s. And in the 80s, that's crazy. So it's like,
crazy. They were so judged. Every holiday, both of their parents were like, when are you going to get married? What's wrong with you? Why don't you have a wife?
I'm like, no, but like my parents were always like, it's okay. You don't have to do that. And so I was always conflicted with that. But then, you know, realizing like, this just isn't the life that I want to live. And the guy that I dated for 6 years, he's incredible, have nothing but amazing things to say about him. But we just wanted different things in life. And I was just like, you know what? I need to do this now, because if I don't do it now, I'm going to look back and I'm really going to regret not doing
it. Sure.
And because I moved to Boston and because we did 3 hours of TV, 5 days a week. It was 9 to midnight every night. So I'm learning Boston sports really quick. I did an NFL show with the Patriots as well. And because I was constantly on TV and constantly talking, is how Dave Portnoy found me from Barstool. So I look at it, I'm like, had I not dragged that trash can down and realized like, ugh, and I don't talk as much as I do, like who knows where I would be. But again, that perfect storm happened because a lot of it is luck, but a lot of it was me taking a chance on just being like, no, I'm ready to go. And the next thing I know, Dave's like, hey, we're starting a college football arm at Barstool Sports. You want to come? I'm like, yeah, I think so. I think that's exactly what I would want to do.
And Barstool is the perfect fit for you. You get to truly, again, be your authentic self. You know, you love the vibe, even though there's some sandwich stealing. We'll forgive that. Yeah, but the energy, the other shows going on, your show with Brandon, Unnecessary Roughness, all of the things that you get to do. This is exactly where you were going this whole time. But I got to give Dave Portnoy a ton of credit for reaching out, because you would have maybe not searched that out because you were loving what you were doing from 9 to midnight.
Yeah. I mean, I loved network TV. That's what I always thought. Like that, you know, Barstool now in 2022 is not what it was even 5 years ago when I first started. You know, when I, growing up, it was like, you work in network TV, you have the NBC sports tag for you in Boston, you worked for ESPN. Something like Barstool didn't even register to me. And so like, I kind of feel like an asshole sometimes when people are like, how'd you get to Barstool? I'm like, well, Dave actually reached out to me, because we're so big now that it's like unfathomable to think that, but it was because he was trying to make Barstool bigger across the country. And so, you know, I look back now and I'm like, you know, I took that risk, and I had so many people tell me it was stupid. Like, why are you going to go to this misogynistic company? You have a network job. NBC wants to accelerate you. So it took a lot of thought for me to be like, do I really want to do this? And I loved my life in Boston, and I still love Boston. I want to end up in Boston, but there was something in me that was like, this is going to be everything that you want. And I remember, you know, you talked about the podcast with Brandon, which I love. He's my big brother. You know, I give him shit all the time.
He is your big brother.
He is. Oh, he's a pain sometimes, but he is. But the moment that I realized, and it came really quickly, that Barstool was the best fit for me is, you know, we do the traveling, the Barstool college football show. So we're basically the irreverent college game day is what we say. And last year, I hate to brag, there was a video of us where we had more people at our show than college game day. And so, of course, you know, Dave can't let that one go. But my first one ever was in Ann Arbor. And we were up on stage, and you know, all these drunk college kids are down there, and I'm hosting it. It's me, Dave, Dan, Big Cat from Pardon My Take. And at the time, it was a guy named Tommy Smokes, which is now Brandon Walker, up there. But I'm getting to host this show. There's a TV element. You know, we've got the TV trucks, production. Yeah. My face is on the side of a bus, but I get to drop F-bombs and I get to say what I actually think. And we get to talk about gambling. Yes. And the boys are yelling at each other. And, we've got beers getting thrown at us. And it's like, I get all the crazy fun football culture that I loved growing up, getting to say whatever I want, and I still get to do the TV aspect. And I was just like, I'm never going to look back. And there's no other place in this industry that gives people that opportunity. And like you mentioned at the very beginning, now I get to do an NFL version of that with Deion Sanders. Like, that's crazy to me. And I still can say whatever I want. It's like, how did I end up here? And thankfully, Dave saw me talk too much on TV at some point.
I mean, also, you know, shout out to Dave also wanting to have balance, because there's such a strong female presence at Barstool that's not just you on camera, the other hosts and shows on camera, but the behind the scenes with Erica, the staff. And he was really, because, you know, he put a lot of work into studying film. He was probably watching people everywhere. Lucky for you, you were in Boston. But your path, Casey, really describes who you are. You've been a risk taker. You've been willing to take chances, but there was always that inner voice. And I remember you telling me a story about you as a young girl with a hairbrush doing some interviews. Can you share this with us?
Yes, of course. My mom. So, you know, we always talk about, like, my mom and dad are so proud, but she's also almost too proud. She's taken this photo that she has of me where, like you mentioned, I'm running around with a hairbrush in my hand, wearing an A&M football jersey. I think she said I was around 2. So I'm not even really probably speaking words. But she said that was when she knew what I wanted to do. I'm like, well, Mom, give me this photo. And she's like, no, it's my photo. This is my treasure. I don't want the world to see it. But it's so cute to, like, look back and realize, like, my parents knew when I was that young what I was passionate about. And then another thing, I think I might have told you this the first time we met too, but my mom has this framed in my childhood bedroom, is my 8th grade graduation. It says, where are you going to be in 15 years? And it says, a sports broadcaster for ESPN and married with kids. And I was like, I don't know where the married with kids thing came from.
Well, that's normal at that age.
but the ESPN sports broadcaster thing was so important to me. So, you know, I've got this cute little picture of tiny Casey saying gibberish into a hairbrush, and then looking at it now when, you know, we do travel and I, you know, we've got all these people now who never believed that I could do this, especially at ESPN. You know, I don't want to, like, rub it in their face, but I kind of do. And I'm sitting there like, this is the dream that I've always wanted. And it's been really hard. There have been really, you know, heartbreaking moments and people telling you no, and it's not always been easy. but I knew I wanted to do this as soon as I could talk. Literally, as soon as I could talk, this is what I wanted to do. And now I'm sitting here and I get to meet amazing people like you and get to live in New York City. Like, how, you know, how can I complain?
And Barstool Sports is the perfect fit for you. And you get to have fun. You get to live, look, dress how you choose. You don't have the external pressures. You work with a great group. And yes, we joke about the sandwich, but it is the most fun. I'll tell you, the very first time I was ever there, I sent a mass text to my friends and I was like, yo, Barstool has me feeling some kind of way. Like, the energy in this place. And also, I love that, like, when somebody's slinging merch, someone else will reach out, hey, you want to come in, grab a t-shirt, take a photo. Everyone helps each other there. It's almost like your own college campus within Barstool, where everybody is just so, they're so backing each other. They're so proud of the brand. They're so happy to be involved. They're so everything. And for you, Casey, I love that I get to share this conversation. We're going to talk a lot of NFL this season, probably make some bets together. I might be watching some games with you. This is first NFL season where, you know, we're really going to make this big. I'm excited. Sports betting, your show again. What projects are you working on right now other than your podcast, Unnecessary Roughness?
So we actually just made the schedule for the upcoming college football season, and it is insane. So the college football show will be traveling all over the country. I'm going to be doing some NASCAR things this summer, which I've never been a NASCAR girl, but I'm getting into we just partnered with DAZN as well. So I'm going to be doing NASCAR and then some boxing stuff. And then obviously the NFL show. Football season is where I really thrive, but Unnecessary Roughness is a college football podcast, but we do it year round, which was another Dave thing. He was like, we want to hear your nonsense year round. So we do that. And it's a lot of fun. You know, it's like, you know how it goes in the off season. Literally you can talk about anything.
Like one story, you know, Nick Saban makes a comment and you're like, oh, thank you for giving us a tidbit to talk about this week. All you need is one thing.
I like jumped out of bed and I was like, oh, I get to put on makeup today and talk about college football. And I know you probably told this story about Barstool, but before we go, like, this is a credit to the way people interact with you here is that, you know, we obviously have celebrities coming in and out all the time. I'll never forget in 2018, the Jersey Shore cast, the original cast came and it was like the whole floor cleared. Now they're here all the time. It's like, you know, it's the most buzz I have ever seen in this office is, I mean, truly, I think I've told you this long before we were even close friends, was the day that you came in, you were doing KFC radio and I walked around the corner and there was a line, a full line. Like, they're trying to get into a club in New York City outside that studio to take a photo with you. And my girl Fran and I were like, we're not waiting behind all these dudes. Like, you know, screw that. And so we like ran to the front and Erica Nardini ran to the front. Like, the girls will come first. And we walked into the studio and it was like the guys didn't even exist. You were like, no, girls, come in. And it was so cool to see because it was like, you were the biggest celebrity they had ever seen. They were so happy to meet you. But in that moment, you wanted the women to feel the most welcomed to you. And I was like, this is a bad bitch. This is the woman that I love. And so now that we're close friends, I see that, but it's true. I mean, you're an all-time celebrity around here. Everybody always says it. And when Lisa Ann came in that first day, it was a scene.
You know, it's my key demographic. Let's say that. But then also, like, you know, these guys have gotten to know me through social media more than ever anybody has. And they see like your sense of humor. They look deeper. This generation might watch somebody on a screen, but they do look deeper. Yes. And once they get to know you, the love they have for you is so different because you're like, all right, you know, she's a cool chick. You know what I mean? Right. She's just cool. You know what I mean? It's that simple. But Casey, so great to share this conversation with my listeners here on the Lisa Ann Experience. Everybody is going to follow you. I will make sure they have you. Are at IG Casey_Smith, Twitter, Casey Smith. I love you so much and I will see you soon. The moment you've been waiting for, the infamous mailbag. I know we all really enjoy the mailbag. I do carefully curate this list and let's get to it. When I say I carefully curate this list, I mean I try to put some weird questions at the beginning because, you know, I'm overflow. The overflow of weird questions are there. And then I try to give us some good questions. If you want to be a part of the mailbag, you have a question for me. Football season is coming up. Maybe you have a football question. Fantasy football season is coming up. I'm already starting to get my studying in every day. I'm so excited for it, but I don't want to rush it because it also means that summer is like over. But you can get your questions to me at asklisaann@gmail.com. Be a part of the mailbag. What do you want to know about me? What do you want to know about my books? I've written two. First book, The Life, came out in 2015. Second book, The Life Back, came out last December on Audible and this January 2022 in paperback and hard copy. You can get them both from my store at shoplisaann.com. With no further ado, let's get to the weirdness first and get it right out of the way. Sean says, sensually sweet salutations, Lisa. Well, there we go. Just sexualizing everything. You know what I mean? Got to put sensually there because you're a dude talking to a girl and it's got to be creepy. I'm Sean. By the way, when he spells his name, he spells it S-E capital A-N. Must be something to that. How's life lately? Question mark, question mark. You inspired my curiosity slash attention. So I would like to earn a lunch date. Earn, he says. I'm a 49-year-old single actor, model, writer, athlete, artist from New York City. I'm 5'10", 209 pounds, athletic built, with a light complexion, a small scar on my dimple. Describe myself as spiritually aware, mentally stimulated, emotionally balanced, and physically challenged person. I appreciate your time and attention. I so look forward to exploring the possibilities. Photos and email and demo. And he sent a YouTube reel with his cell number and a home phone number. Sean has asked me out multiple times in the past. This is not the first email from Sean. I just ignored them for quite some time. Let's address this. This is a mailbag, asklisaann@gmail.com, for intriguing questions, things you may want to know about me, my first concert, my favorite food, you know, some things we've already gone over, but be creative, you know? This is not where you pitch yourself for a date. Not taking offers for lunch date. People don't have to like, what did he say? I would like to earn. You don't earn a lunch date. See, the thing is, I'm an entertainer that entertains the masses. There was one side of my life that you got very comfortable with, and now there's this side of my life. I'm a communicator. This is what I love to do, whether it's on social media, at The Real Lisa Ann, whether it's on this podcast right here, The Real Lisa Ann, The Lisa Ann Experience, whether it's on Dudes Do Better. During the football season, Sunday mornings, I do a YouTube Live talking about the day's lineup of games. You know, there's a lot of ways that I communicate. But the way that I don't communicate, that I can't seem to express enough to everybody, is in a one-on-one situation with strangers. And I think the common sense thinker, which by the way, I've really learned the common sense, not so common. The common sense thinker, that's normal. Like, yeah, why would you think that you can just reach out to somebody and they're going to go on a date with you? People need to start realizing that the computer is not how you're going to make lasting connections. Going out and meeting people. Earlier in this episode, I talked about charity events. Getting out in front of people and making new friends, and through those friends, making new friends is actually how you're going to get a lunch date. You're not going to get a lunch date just emailing random celebrities and hoping that one of them bites. You know, it's also not the greatest way to pitch yourself. I'm old school. I just turned 50 May 9th. I do need to have some sort of vibe with somebody. I'm never going to get a vibe from an email. I'm never going to get a vibe from a dating app. I'm never going to be on a dating app. I'm never going to get a vibe from social media. I'm never going to just meet a stranger because they pitch themselves to me. But I know this really isn't about me as much as it's about everybody else thinking this works. So when I go through my emails and there's thousands of date requests and then a couple good ones that I get to save for the end of the mailbag, I realize that there is a huge disconnect from reality. And it's something that we should really try to work on. It's something that if you are listening to this podcast, you probably would never have sent me this email. But I do believe most of these kind of emails come from people who don't listen to my podcast. They don't want to apply themselves. They don't want to learn about me. They just want to go to lunch with me. They just want something from me. They want to go on a date with me. They want to go to the park with me and be with me. But let's remove me from the element and let's look at the problem here of why people think this is appropriate. Human beings should meet and have a vibe and have a conversation, share a smile, a sparkle in the eye across the room. Some sort of engagement should happen. It isn't like you're writing a review about yourself on Amazon. It isn't like you're going and just purchasing something. This is a really confused state of time where there are a lot of men out there. I don't know if women are doing it because I don't get it from women. But you guys can tell me if you are getting it from women, please email me at asklisaann@gmail.com. But there's a large group of people that believe they don't have to leave their house to meet someone. And you do. You do. You should. You should want to. There's a beautiful world out there. And it's not about your income, because you can go and take a walk with somebody with a coffee. You can go and meet somebody at a park. You can go. There's so many options. But for men that are having this issue, I suggest you just start getting out and making small talk with women. Doesn't mean you're trying to date them. Doesn't mean you're trying to go to lunch with them. But whether it's a waitress, whether it's a barista, just hello, how are you? Exercise that muscle. It's just like training at the gym. You're going to have to build up a little bit, right? Because obviously you're not in the great mental space if you believe that you should earn a lunch date with somebody who doesn't date strangers, doesn't want to go to lunch, and has millions upon millions of followers a day asking her pretty much the same thing. Let's put math in the equation. It would be unrealistic to think that that's possible, or that I would want to, but that it's possible for me to go out with millions of people a day. So what I'm now surveying the situation with Sean's email is I'm going to remove me from the element, and I'm going to look at the bigger picture of this. The scary times we're living in, the constant news that is incredibly tragic. There has to be some sort of a connection between the lack of ability to communicate and express yourselves in person, in human form, as opposed to thinking putting your bio into some email is going to get you interaction with a woman. Get out there, Sean, if you listen to my podcast. Get involved with charity. Find something that matters to you and be a part of it. Get out with your friends. Get away from the computer. You know, take a walk. You're not going to get it this way. It's not going to work, but let's go to the second email because it's kind of similar. Georgie says, I'm your big fan. Is it possible to make sex together? It is my dream. I think Georgie's definitely not a listener. He's definitely from another country using Google Translate, because for some reason, Google Translate always says make sex instead of have sex. I don't know why. I don't know what that is, but I notice it. There's a common thread here. But again, it's the same. That is confusing, because that means that people think this works. Everybody needs to get out. Get out, people. All right, there's one more weird one. Oh, no, there's two. I'm sorry. I guess I didn't find many good ones today. This one's all in the subject matter, so I do like to add these in. There's one message that just says, my message to Lisa, my first crush. Oh, it's a whole email. My message to Lisa, my first crush, regarding the opportunity to Skype for my birthday. That's in the subject matter. Hello. Hello, Lisa Ann. My name is Alex. I'm 28 years old and I live in Miami, Florida. Lisa, you have been my very first crush growing up. I know, so inappropriate, right? But you have been truly the most amazing and gorgeous woman that I've seen. Lisa, you are like a real life goddess. Lisa, I know you are busy being the most icon actress and sports expert, but I was wondering if there could be a possibility to chat with you and get to know you, my very first crush, on my birthday. May 29th is my birthday in 3 weeks, and it would be the most amazing gift and dream come true. Sincerely, Alex. I'm just flipping it over. Here's the thing. A crush should be both ways. Now, I can understand infatuation or being a fan or being you know, obsessed with somebody you see on TV, but don't y'all out there think a crush should go both ways? Alex is only 28 years old, living in Miami, Florida, which is an awesome place to live, and he is trying to fulfill a birthday dream with a stranger. Again, are we seeing the disconnect here? Let's remove me from the element. This is a lot of people that have started to lean on the internet and the computer, I think, a little bit too hard, and have not created their own real lives. These are fake lives. This is an obsession from watching adult content with me in it. And he believes I'm his crush and that I owe him some birthday thing, which of course, obviously, you know, I'm not doing. But again, it adds to how many times a day I have to say no to people because of everybody's expectations, because of everybody's needs, because I have to make their wishes come true, because I have to make their dreams come true, because I'm My Little Pony and people want to bring me off the shelf and play with me whenever they want. And I should be okay with that. And as I sat and thought about it this week when I was skimming through emails and had to go through chaos, I realized, like, maybe this just isn't about me. Maybe this is just about the confusion of what the internet actually provides. The internet is a tool. It's a tool in the toolbox of life, but it's not life. The toolbox is you. What other tools are you going to put in that toolbox? The internet is so handy for learning and doing things and booking travel and exploring the world and watching the Northern Lights on a cam. Like, there's so many great things. But meeting other people, unless you're on dating apps, that's your jam, not judging, that's people's jam. But meeting random strangers, expecting to earn a lunch date, expecting to make sex with them, expecting to get a birthday Skype, like the entitlement of this kid, just because he's got a crush, I don't have to give my time, because time is not a renewable resource. Time is the most valuable resource we have. I'd rather spend time like I did last night, making my girl Haley a special dinner before she goes to Germany. Like, I'd rather spend my time doing soulful, fulfilling things, because the rest of my time is spent working. But let's look around our worlds and let's all kind of hold hands like we used to. We would walk out of school on a field trip. And let's make sure that there's nobody in our circle that we see leaning on the internet, the computer, too hard. Let's remind them that it's just a tool, but it's not an outlet. The outlet for our friend Alex, who's turning 28, he's turning 29, he's 28 now. Alex, a young 28-year-old man living in a beautiful city of Miami, should be out, shouldn't be sending an email wanting to meet a stranger for his birthday. So when I say hold hands, let's all look around ourselves and check in on our friends and make sure everybody's fulfilled and has what they need and isn't looking for something in the wrong places. And if you have teenagers at home, computers, internet, social media, all of these things are definitely adding to your task, but it is something that I think these conversations need to be had. What you see on the internet may not be real, may not come true for you, doesn't owe you anything. So these things that I've removed myself from the element this week, and I realize this is not me, it's them, but it's also not looking at the computer, the internet, your technology as a tool, not the toolbox. So get out there and do things and meet people in person. Let's go with some good questions. Okay. Richard McCann sent an email a couple weeks ago. And Richard, I'm getting to it right here because you reminded me about it. And I appreciate you reminding me about it. He writes, I'm just curious to know, have you ever seen a fortune teller? Is the first question. What's your approach in resolving conflict with others is the second question. What's your soul asking of you is the third question. I look forward to hearing from you. Well, let's go with the first question. These are better questions than me making your dreams come true on your birthday. First one, have you ever seen a fortune teller? I have. I think it's a fun thing to do. It's not something that I'm going to make like big decisions on. Okay. I'm not going there because I need help with something. But my very first time, I was 18 years old. I was in New Orleans for my first time. I was traveling with a female review show called the Dream Girl Centerfolds. We were driving through all these different cities, doing a tour at clubs. And the girl said to me like, oh, you want to go to Bourbon Street and have our fortunes told. Like, okay, it's Bourbon Street. Like, this is the coolest place to do this. It's such a kitschy little city. And I know I'm going to get this woman that has this really. And so I did it there. I did it again on a vacation in Hawaii. And I did it once at a friend's party that had fortune tellers come. I think it's fun. I think it's just something to explore. I think it's interesting to really watch the fortune teller, because they're so good at reading body language. They're so good at reading emotions. They're highly intelligent people. They use the gifts that they have, and they also use the sense that they've acquired from doing this and seeing when they've struck a chord, when they haven't. But I will say the woman in New Orleans told me something that came very true years later. Very true. And I didn't hint to this, allude to this. And I remember looking back at it and going, oh, okay, all right. So I'm open and receptive to all kinds of different experiments and things, but I thought it was really fun. And doing it the first time on Bourbon Street, like, it's a fun thing to do on vacation in the right frame of mind, where you're just like totally open-minded and just feeling it. Second question, what's your approach in resolving conflict with others? So one of the greatest books I've read is How to Have Difficult Conversations. How to Have Difficult Conversations really broke that down of like, because resolving conflict starts with communication. So if you don't know how to have this difficult conversation, then it's really hard to move forward. And if this is a really debate back and forth, you think this is going to take, you know, time, there's nothing wrong with setting some parameters because you don't want to talk over each other. So if you're having a conflict with someone else, you want to give them their fair share of time. They should give you your fair share of time. And maybe you sit down and game plan and have some sort of an agreement beforehand. Okay, let's put 30 minutes into this. We're both going to get 15 minutes to talk because you don't always have to agree at the end of the day. You can both give your points and still see things very differently, and that's okay too. You can respect each other's opinion being different, but know that you still love each other, or maybe you still work together and you have to get along at work no matter what. The key here is that you want to resolve the conflict. And always being right or always needing to be right never resolves conflict. So compromise. Compromise is a huge part of it. And one of the great things that Larry David said on Curb Your Enthusiasm was, a real compromise is when both parties walk away slightly dissatisfied. I thought that was so brilliant because it's true. Like if one person feels they won, then it wasn't a compromise. One person won, one person lost. So a true compromise. So Richard, if you want to resolve conflict, understand that you're not going to probably walk away going, I was right. You shouldn't want to. The end game is making amends with the person on the other end of this conflict, whether, again, I said family, loved one, relationship, coworker, neighbor, whoever it may be. You want to resolve it because you don't want it lingering. It always feels better to be in a positive space than a negative space. So be open-minded. Be a good listener. Don't talk over the person that's talking. Make sure they're allowing your time to talk to, but don't drag it out. Just rip off the Band-Aid, put a timer on it. I've sat down with people to resolve conflict where we've set a timer on our phone and it was a master timer. And then it was a 2-minute talk time each way back and forth. We could express our points and we just walked it off. Like, how do you think athletes that travel in a team setting for seasons after seasons resolve conflict? They have to get along. They got to play well, but sure, they're going to have a little disagreement. Somebody's going to be chippy one day. Anybody who works in a team environment has to resolve conflict because you don't want it carrying over to the rest of the team. It spreads like wildfire, right? So Richard, if you, my friend, are looking to resolve a conflict, be patient, be open-minded. Don't be worried about being right and understand the fine words of Larry David that a true compromise, both parties walk away slightly dissatisfied. Your third question, what's my soul asking of me? My soul is not currently asking me anything, which is great. My soul is thanking me daily for the little things that I'm doing with having a better social life, spending more one-on-one time with my friends. Even Sunday night, I was on a 4-hour Skype call with my best friend, Tina. Not Skype. I'm so old school. FaceTime. We schedule them in advance. We sit down, you know, we're like ready. We catch up on all these things. We hadn't had a good catch up since before my tear of travel for my birthday. But my soul is fed right now, feeling really good about my immediate circle, my immediate interactions, my space that I'm living, my content that I'm creating, the people that I'm connected with, the charity events that I'm doing. I feel like I'm moving at this pace of just happiness, peace. I'm incredibly content. I have no complaints. So I am feeding my soul to keep it in this space. And it's important. We can get wrapped up with work. We can get busy with things. We can get wrapped up with so many things, but scheduling time for friends, I've found since I don't have a family connection, they're my family. And those friends really help me feel love and give me love and show me love. And so that's the warmth that I need, whether it's your chosen family, which are my friends, or your family, whoever it is, that's feeding my soul. So hopefully, Richard, you're feeding your soul as well. And that is, oh, we got one more here. Mike. Mike says, Lisa Ann, the pics you post are a lot in Central Park. I have a question for you, you being from Easton, Pennsylvania. Have you ever heard of Nobles Amusement Park? It's a park with a bunch of thrill rides and great food, and I'm sure they've got some pretty great strawberry shortcake. I have not heard of Nobles. We used to go to Dorney Park, and when I was a kid, there was a little park called Bushkill Park that is no longer there. We used to go to Bushkill Park. It was our local, like, had a tiny little salt and pepper shaker ride, and a little Ferris wheel, and it was just enough, but I have not been there. I haven't been back to Easton in a minute. I need to go back and visit my friends from high school this summer, which I probably will do, but, you know, I just kind of outgrew the amusement park thing. much more of a day spa situation of a free day. I'd rather go to the day spa. Different strokes for different folks, but everybody, thank you right here for listening. Grab yourself some Fit Soda today. Go to @FitSodas on Instagram, Fit Soda on Twitter. Find a store locator so you can get some on your own. You're going to love it. If you're a new listener, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review my podcast. It helps so much. And you can check out both of my books at shoplisaann.com. I will be in Orlando, Florida at Dave & Buster's on June 11th. I will be at Dave & Buster's in Nashville, Tennessee on June 29th. I look forward to going to those events. Exotica Miami in July, Exotica New Jersey in October. Then I'm going to Switzerland late October for an event, and then back to Exotica DC in December. I will be sharing all of my events. You can follow all of my social media platforms at The Real Lisa Ann. That is Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok. Go there. You won't miss a flyer. I look forward to seeing you all. And I was wrong. It is June 12th in Orlando. Let me just correct myself. I just had a moment where I was like, no, your flight is on the 11th, Lisa. You are there the 12th. So June 12th, Orlando, Florida, Dave & Buster's. July 29th, Nashville, Tennessee, Dave & Buster's. I will be signing books, doing a meet and greet. I love to chat it up. It's so fun to get to see everybody again. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Lisa Ann Experience.